Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Music of all time, right? James Bond theme, 007, Bond, James Bond.
You know, this and also Shirley Bassey singing Goldfinger.
Oh, super classy.
Wow.
Yeah, super classy, but this is just, if you went into the dictionary right now, Uncle Dean, what's a dictionary? You would find, if you looked up coolest music ever made, this music would start playing when you got to that page. When you got to that
Even
page
if
in a book.
Your dictionary is from 1952.
Right. Uncle Dean, what's a book? I can't tell you how sad I was, profoundly sad I was, when I heard the news yesterday of the passing of Sean Connery. Age of 90 years old, apparently.
Wow, listen to that band.
Right?
Mm. Swing it.
Do you know anything about this orchestra that's playing this?
I don't.
You're the one that has all the... You know who played second fiddle on the Andy Griffith theme. You have all the details of every song.
Did you know that Earl Hagen whistled the theme on the opening closing credit? Never mind.
We do now.
Well, seriously, I wonder who did this music.
We can find out very quickly.
Listen to that. Listen to that. Then you cut to a beach... You cut to a beach, and James Bond's laying there with some Bond girl.
Mm-hmm. Strikingly beautiful woman.
His umbrella rings, and he answers it.
Talking to his watch.
Yeah, that seemed like a far-out thing back then, uh-huh. Right? Wasn't that? But I was just, you know, I was, where do I go on Saturday morning, early on Saturday morning?
The Jewel.
Your friendly neighborhood Jewel.
Go to the Jewel, right, and do my shopping. Get an alert on my phone. I look, Sean Connery passes away. I stopped in my tracks. I was so sad to hear that news. I didn't know that he had been ill. They haven't really released the cause of death, but they said that he had been ill. His family says that he had been ill for a while, and they said died in his sleep, surrounded by his family in Nassau in the Bahamas. That's where he lived, and died 90 years old. Well, man, what a legacy he leaves us, right?
Seven James Bond movies?
Seven James Bond movies.
Wow. And, of course, in The Untouchables, what an awesome role in
the
that.
The only film for which he won an Academy Award. It's the only film for which he was nominated for an Academy Award.
That's amazing, too.
Isn't that amazing that he wasn't nominated for any of the James Bond movies, which arguably are some of the greatest films of all time, wasn't nominated for, you know, some of his other films, like the Indiana Jones movies, or movies like The Wind and the Lion, or Hunt for Red October, or The Man Who Would Be King. I mean, you know, also fantastic film performances. But his only Academy Award was a supporting actor's win, for his role in The Untouchables. Shot where? Here in the city of Chicago.
I remember it well.
Here in the city of Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Walking down Michigan Avenue, and they converted Roosevelt University, the entrance to Roosevelt University, to the hotel where Kevin Costner met Robert De Niro as Elliot Ness and Al Capone, respectively.
It's a spectacular
using that staircase
scene.
In there. Amazing.
Spectacular. Yeah. That's one of the classic scenes from that movie. the stairwell, baby buggy. Well, I thought that was in Union Station.
That was though. In Union Station, yes.
Is this a different role, the one that you're talking
about? No, it's the same one where he first, Ness walks into what is supposed to be a hotel or a mansion where Capone is, and Robert De Niro as Capone walks down that grand staircase, which is in that main lobby off of Michigan Avenue.
Right.
The auditorium building is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. But that's Roosevelt University building. Another spectacular building there. Ryan, do we have that clip from The Untouchables, the great Sean Connery talking to a young actor by the name of Kevin Costner?
You wanted to know how to get Capone. Do you really want to get him? You see what I'm saying? What are you prepared to do?
Everything within the law.
And then what are you prepared to do? If you open the ball on these people, Mr. Nash, you must be prepared to go all the way. Because they won't give up the fight until one of you is dead.
I want to get Capone. I don't know how to get him.
You want to get Capone? Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue.
That's the Chicago way. That's the Chicago way. That's fantastic.
Now, that's the scene where they're on the bridge, right?
Yes.
Where they're walking and discussing how to get Capone. Yeah.
It's fantastic. That's just such a fantastic movie. I just talked to Kevin Costner 2 weeks ago and, reminded him about The Untouchables and what memories does he have of The Untouchables. We'll find the clip and play it for you later, but he said the biggest thing that he remembers, two things he remembers about shooting that film here is, number one was how ridiculously cold it was here, that even though there wasn't a cloud in the sky and it was a beautiful sunny day, he said you step out of your trailer and the hairs in your nose crack off because it's
welcome
so
to Chicago.
That's the Chicago way.
That's the Chicago way. Mr. Costner. Uh-huh. And he said meeting the biggest movie star that he had ever met, the great Sean Connery. So I mean, even he was moved by him. And there are stories about how no one was sure if Kevin Costner could carry this movie by himself. He was the star of the movie, and a lot of the people in the movie were not cutting him any slack, except Sean Connery, who was supportive and helpful. And, can you imagine how intimidating that would be if you're a young actor and you have to do scenes with Sean Connery? How intimidating for Kevin Costner.
And Robert De Niro.
And De Niro. But, Connery's legendary at this point. I guess De Niro sort of is, too, in 1987. But Connery put him completely at ease and gave him advice and was helpful and kind to him. That's the kind of guy that we're talking about here.
I'm reading on the Bond theme. Five saxophone, nine brass instruments, a solo guitar. The guy that played the guitar,
Vic Flick.
What a name.
That's going to be my next radio name.
Yes.
Was paid £6.
When I get fired from here and I'm over at B96, that's going to be my new name.
You better be careful how you say it.
Vic Flick.
Was paid £6 or $7.77 to play that motif.
How about that? That's cool. Vic Flick. Hi, I'm Vic Flick, everybody. Hey, can you tell me which studio to go to? I'm supposed to play guitar for some James Bond movie. I don't know what it is exactly. I'll just tell them that Vic Flick is here. the magic of Vic Flick.
And he got his $7 worth, didn't he?
That's what 007 meant. The £7 that he made.
The decimal point, 007.
How about that? That was cool. That's a very interesting story.
It is.
He starred in Dr. No, Goldfinger. I think that's my favorite James Bond movie, Goldfinger. From Russia with Love, Thunderball, You Only Live Twice, Diamonds Are Forever, and Never Say Never.
Now, what was it that put an end to him playing James Bond, and then we ended up with Roger Moore and Pierce Brosnan.
He got tired of it.
He just got tired of it?
He did, my understanding, he did the five movies and got tired of it. They talked him into one more, Diamonds Are Forever, and then several years later he came back. In the 1980s he came back as James Bond and Never Say Never Again. That really was not the greatest James Bond movie ever made. But those original movies, Dr. No, Goldfinger, Russia with Love, Thunderball, spectacular. Absolutely spectacular. And, as I say, I don't know if... I'm not 100% sure why Goldfinger is my favorite, but it is. I definitely remember seeing it in the theater. I definitely remember going to the Shelton Theater on the south side, the southeast side of Chicago, and watching it up on the big screen, and was so jacked when I came out of it of how cool the whole thing was. I got to play that Shirley Bassey song later on, though, Shawnee. Good idea.
Yeah, definitely.
Good idea.
Yeah.
So we'll get to that. So anyway, our great sadness about the death of Sean Connery. We'll talk more about him later. Oh! And I'd mentioned that I actually did get to interview Sean Connery one time for his final movie, A League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, in 2003. And we dug through the archives this morning. We found the interview, believe it or not. Normally we can't find them in time because there's so many of them. But we did find it, and we're going to play my one and only interview with Sean Connery. When you listen to the interview, see if you can hear my knees knocking, because that's how nervous I was. That's how scared I was. You know, people always ask you, are you nervous interviewing these A-listers? And 99% of the time, no, I'm not. When I first interviewed Julie Andrews, I was nervous. When I first interviewed Dick Van Dyke, I was nervous. The classics, nervous. Sean Connery, I don't think I've ever been more nervous. I didn't even listen to the interview this morning because I'm afraid that I'm stammering and doing my Chris Farley fanboy. Remember when you're laying on the table and the laser beam was coming to you in Goldfinger? Remember that? That, in my mind, that's how that interview was, because I know I was shaking in my boots talking with the great Sean Connery.
Well, if he put Kevin Costner at ease, I imagine he put you at ease also.
I don't remember any drama.
We'll find out.
So we'll play. Wouldn't it be funny if that's actually what I asked him? Hey, remember when you were in James Bond.
You were really great.
You're cool, man. You're cool. All right, so we'll get play that later on today. So, oh, by the way, nice reaction, very, very nice reaction when DeBoteview joined me the other day when I was filling in for Anna DeVlantis.
Yeah, I've heard good things, too. It was a lot of fun.
On the Midday Show. People were very, very kind, saying how much they enjoyed hearing all three of us on the Midday Show, which was fun. And I was filling in for Anna, and... Shawnee and Andy joined me so we could talk about our big Tree Time special that's next week. Are you ready for that? Are you guys ready for
that? Yeah, I'm gearing up for it, sure.
How are you gearing up for it?
Well, I'm preparing for whatever we have to prepare for.
You drove out to Lake Barrington.
What are you, a politician? Yeah. What do you think? This is Pennsylvania?
Our future lies ahead of us.
I am preparing for whatever
we have to prepare for.
I pledge to you on the first day of my term, I'll prepare for what I need to prepare.
Let's get ready to get ready.
He's got my vote.
Yes.
Our big Tree Time special that we normally do out at Tree Time Christmas Creations in Lake Barrington. Obviously, we're not going out there with a live audience this year. We're going to do here from our studios on Michigan Avenue, our Skyline Studios. And we're going to try to recreate the same fun. We've got a lot of surprises and some clips from shows gone by that we've done out there, some fun we've had. So that's all going to be next Sunday here on the Big WGN. starting at 9 o'clock, so everybody be on time. Andy, get your coffee with Red Bull.
I will do that.
Ready to go, so you're full of...
energy.
Energy.
Mm-hmm.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, moms and dads, kids across the sea, it's time once again for America's favorite, the far-flung forecast. A fascinating compendium of interesting facts and figures. And today, wearing his red Make America Far-Flung Again hat, here's Dave Schwann.
And thank you. Good morning, everybody. Our far-flung forecast takes us out to Excelsior Springs,
Excelsior, Missouri.
Excelsior Springs, Missouri has a population of 11,084. And it goes back to the 1830s and 1840s when a group of settlers moving west stayed in the area for a little while and noticed that there was natural spring water coming up in various places. And the town quickly grew, especially when a railroad went through and became a kind of a destination because of the spring water in the 19th century.
Do you think two guys were walking down the street and one of them said to the other, "Hey, there's natural spring water coming."
And the other one said, "Excelsior." And they said, "Yeah, that's a good name for this town.
That would be a good name for a town.
Excelsior Springs." Now, we bring up Excelsior Springs because it is not far from Kansas City, Missouri, or do you say Missouri, and also very close to Independence, Missouri.
Or
who
Missouri.
Who lived in Independence, Missouri?
I know.
Who?
Let's see if Ryan knows. Producer Ryan,
he's a smart guy.
Truman.
You got it.
Well, I was born and raised in Missouri, though. So.
That's right. You would know.
Right.
Harry S. Truman lived in Independence, Missouri, maintained a home there really, literally until his death. And but we mentioned Excelsior Springs and its adjacency to Independence because 72 years ago tomorrow was the amazing election of 1948 when Harry Truman, who was the current president because he assumed office after Franklin Roosevelt died in 1945,
right. They
all thought he was going to lose to Thomas Dewey. So he had had enough of campaigning and the whistle stopping and everything else. He just wanted to get away. He went to the historic Elms Hotel in Excelsior Springs, Missouri, to get away from the media and all kinds of everything else, just to kind of relax and be by himself and to just take whatever news came. Well, of course, the news came early on the morning of November 3rd that he, in fact, had won the election.
Not if you're reading the Chicago
but
Tribune.
Not if you were reading the Chicago Tribune, because the edition of November 3rd has that great headline, "Dewey defeats Truman," and the great picture of Truman holding that up with an ear-to-ear grin.
Holding up the incorrect newspaper article.
And you know what? From time to time, when we were working in Tribune Tower, as you remember, Dean, a long, long time ago, the paper was printed in the basement of the tower.
Right.
Well, how about that? On the early morning of November 3rd, those very newspapers were probably being shipped out on that loading dock that we walked through.
Stinky old loading dock that we had.
I have also found a great audio clip with Harry Truman talking about that election night and his time at the hotel and how he was listening to the radio to get election results for a time before he went into his room and went to bed. He was listening to a legendary commentator of the time, H.V. Kaltenborn.
Oh, my.
Well, here is President Truman and his imitation of H.V. Kaltenborn on election night.
I had on the National Broadcasting Company. And Miss Kaltenborn was saying, "While the president is a million votes ahead in the popular vote, we have yet to hear from him." And we are very sure that when the country vote comes in, Mr. Truman will be defeated by an overwhelming majority. And I went back to bed and went to sleep.
funny.
Later that morning.
That's funny, the president mocking a newscaster like that.
That morning, however, November 3rd, the Secret Service woke him up and said, Mr. Truman, you have won the election. And his reaction was, we got him beat. And served 4 years in his own right as a president, which he wanted to do, serving a term being elected rather than being ascending to the office.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember over in the Tribune Tower, they had these giant, beautiful recreations of famous headlines.
Yeah, those were great.
And one of them, to their credit, the Chicago Tribune, they had...
put up Dewey Defeats Truman.
They had Harry Truman holding up the Dewey Defeats Truman, even though it was one of the most glaring errors that a newspaper had ever made.
Yeah. Excelsior Springs, sunny day today. It's 42 degrees there.
I wonder if they kept that newspaper headline up there now that it's a mattress store over there.
I don't know.
It's right over by the down pillows.
Dewey defeats Serta.
Stearns and Foster defeats Serta. Okay. And then a hero comes along with the strength to carry on. 941. Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. I wanted to play this cut. I've been meaning to play it for weeks during our segment with Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern's Central DuPage Hospital, because I feel like during the run of this pandemic, I mean, everyone is pandemic and COVID-19 fatigued from what we're going through, but it seems like we're going not only through a peak of positive test results right now, but a peak of COVID-19 fatigue as well. You know who's not fatigued? The heroes who are taking care of us when we get sick, the people who are working in the hospitals and the health centers and who have been in the ICU units and helping people with their elderly relatives who are in hospitals and nursing homes, the doctors, the nurses, the certified nurse assistants who are there. They're every single day helping people. They are the heroes. And I wanted to acknowledge them. And Dr. Kevin Most, that includes you, my friend, helping people nonstop, COVID-19 or not. That's what you've always done. But, you know, through all of this, I think it's very important that we, you know, stop and say thank you in some way. I saw several reports this week on the news of nurses, doctors, talking to different news anchors about how stressful it is for them to be there. And in many cases, when patients are in their final hours, they having to be the ones there to hold the hand of the person who's about to pass away, and trying to bring some humanity to this very inhumane situation that we're in right now. So I know that you hate taking any kind of praise, Kevin, but sorry. I gotta give you some.
Well, Dean, I appreciate it. I appreciate your comments just because I'm so proud of not only the team at Northwestern, but, you know, this is a time where we really rally around as a community of caregivers. And I'm really proud of everything that the healthcare providers have been doing. You know, we took an illness that no one knew anything about that was deadly, threw it at this team and said, not only do you have to figure it out for the science side of it, but you have to be there for the emotional side of it. And I can tell you that is draining for nurses, for doctors, sure, the frustration, as well as, like you said, potentially being the one there that's holding someone's hand as they pass from this illness. So it's another reason why we really need to slow this down, because this healthcare team cannot take 4 months of that again.
I'm reading and seeing reports from around the country where certain regions, certain states, certain hospitals in the very high positivity zones are already maxed out. And, you know, if trends continue the way that they are with people testing positive and getting sick, we're going to be in some real dire straits when it comes to, you know, December, January, February, if things can't continue to trend the way that they do.
The trend is so concerning. You know, we do, I don't want to call it game theory, but we do projections, and we try at Northwestern to keep our projections at a kind of a tight range, you know, 7 to 10 days. What's going to happen over the next 2 weeks? There are some health systems that have looked at projections more long term that are looking for a peak that's going to that COVID will peak sometime in late December. If that's the case, we are going to be in a world of hurt. So, and I'm not sure if we've already passed that point. Like, are we past the tipping point right now?
Right.
You know, you talk about groups being able to get together of 25 people. Well, if you have a group of 25 people and a positivity rate in the state of 9%, chances are that two people in that group are going to be positive and not know it. So we really start to get concerned when we see numbers that continue to go up and creep up.
You know, and, you know, several things bring to mind this week how some people are just not paying attention to what they need to do to protect themselves, their loved ones, people around them, and themselves. When we see people in large gatherings, virtually 100% without masks, when the big blow up this week was with some Illinois restaurant owners that are upset that their restaurants are going to have to be carry out only again after, you know, being able to have some outdoor seating when the weather was a little bit nicer. Now things are shutting down again. And I've been trying to get an answer to this. The Illinois restaurant owners are saying that they are no more at risk of spreading the virus than a grocery store or a Home Depot or, you know, stores that are, quote, essential services. Do you think that's true?
I do. I mean, I think that, you know, the restaurant owners, the individual restaurant owners have taken a lot of expense to protect. They want to protect their business. So believe me, they're doing everything they can. They say, hey, if we can only have 25% occupancy, we need to keep this distancing. You know, that's great. I just wish in the, you know, May or June, we would have gone to the restaurants and said, work on your air circulation. Let's see the air circulation patterns. How often are you turning over air? What are you going to do about masking individuals in the restaurant, distancing? Because us thinking that you can go sit outside in a tent and be safer than you are inside in a restaurant, that just doesn't add up. And like you said, you know, in grocery stores and Walmarts and Home Depot, you're exposed to a lot of people who you don't know. Often when you're in a restaurant, you're with a pod, a controlled pod, and if one of them were to get positive, you can do easy contact tracing just by yourselves versus getting exposed by somebody waiting in line at one of the retail stores, and you have no clue.
What about the other big story of this week of how Illinois high school sports said that they were going to go ahead and start playing and essentially defy the governor's order. What's your take on the safety of that?
Yeah, you know, I am big on kids being back in school in a hybrid fashion so that they can be distanced. I know the importance of sports, but to be honest with you, I think this is one time that we really need to take a step back. You watch basketball players, you watch wrestlers. These kids are face to face. They're yelling. If they're going to be positive, they're going to spread. So if you take a team of 10 and one of them's positive, and now you put two teams on the court, you've got a huge chance of spreading. Now, some people are saying, you know what? You're missing the point, Dr. Most. This is fine with kids. They really do well with it. And I'm saying I'm not missing the point. Those are the same kids that are going home to parents, home to vulnerable populations. And although we're looking at rates of positivity, I have to tell everybody, it comes down to the stress that's going to be put on the healthcare system. That is what we're trying to dampen. Not the, oh my gosh, let's let them all go out and play basketball and do fine. We the healthcare systems, then have to deal with the repercussions of that basketball player going to see his grandmother or going home to see a parent who might be on chemotherapy and then having the burden placed on the hospital.
Another big story that broke, it was a result of something that President Trump said, in which in one of his campaign stops, these massive campaign stops for which most people are not wearing masks, he said that doctors and hospitals are making money off of COVID-19, that people who get COVID-19 means money in the pockets of the doctors and the hospitals. How is the health industry responding to that?
Oh, You can imagine, Dean. That is the most offensive comment anybody can make to a team of physician, nurses, frontline healthcare team that's risking their life every day. If he thinks we're making money, then he needs a new class in economics. We've had, last year, in 2019, 30 hospitals filed for bankruptcies. This year, by June, we had already hit 30. Last week, 16 hospitals filed for bankruptcy. Doctors have been furloughed. Doctors are, and it is so ludicrous that he made that comment and so offensive. I hope that there's not a doctor, and I hate to go political, but I hope that there's not a doctor out there that's going to vote for this because, boy, it was so off base, and that is not a true statement. Now, let me throw a little caveat. Hospitals do get paid a little bit more for a COVID patient, and let me tell you the reasons. Nursing ratios have to change. Well, if you're taking care of a COVID patient, you have to wear PPE and go in and out. So you can't take care of four patients. You can't take care of five patients. You need to take care of three patients. So therefore, we have additional nurses. The cost of PPP is not insignificant. We're changing rooms. We're adding facilities to make sure we have negative airflow rooms. The cost to that is not insignificant. And COVID patients stay longer. If anybody understands how Medicare works, Medicare gives the hospital X dollars for a condition, whether that patient stays for 3 days or whether they stay for 20 days. So that's how we also know that COVID patients are here longer. So if he thinks we're making money, boy, he is not only mistaken, he's ignorant to the economics of how healthcare works.
Didn't mean
and
to
I'm
throw
sorry,
you.
I'm sorry, I got a little strong there, but well, it really aggravated all the medical professionals.
I just wanted to get the reaction of medical professionals because, you know, he makes the statement and the crowd cheers. And, you know, you never hear the other side of it. I think it's only fair. I didn't mean to throw you into a, you know, into some place where you didn't want to be, but I think it's more than fair to have somebody respond to a statement like that that's made. Coming up after 10 o'clock, my one-on-one interview from 2003 with the legendary and now the late Sean Connery, who passed away yesterday. Here, Kevin, I'll get you. Let me ask you a question that's really controversial. Who's the best James Bond?
Wow, you have to go Sean Connery. I'm sorry.
I'm with you 100% on that.
and we'll, if I got that right with your answer, that really makes me feel pretty good. Now right. I should be able to ask you a medical question.
Yeah, good luck with that. This is George on the line for Dr. Kevin Most. Good morning, George, and WGN.
Good morning, and thank you for all of the healthcare workers that we have out there.
Amen.
My question, my son and his wife both recently had COVID about a week ago. Is it going to be safe for them to visit us over Thanksgiving? I'm 70 years old and my wife is 68 years old.
So George, a couple things. One, certainly, your son and wife, hopefully they did well and have recovered from COVID, which is great. They will have some immunity, hopefully, there. We don't know how long, but they should still have all the precautions because we have seen there have been some cases of secondary infections. That being said, I am telling most people at Thanksgiving, be really careful. If you look at the spreading of the illness right now, it's based on small gatherings inside homes versus large other things that we used to be able to do. So be careful, mask, you know, keep your distance, but certainly the chance of them coming back positive to be able to spread within a couple of weeks is very low.
Okay.
Appreciate the call.
I thank you.
Thanks, George. Here's a question for you, doctor, from the 815 area code. Our 21-year-old daughter had COVID in late August. She recovered well and still has an occasional issue with taste and smell. What other issues should we be worried about? She has no comorbidities.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of these younger people will really do well with the illness, but they may have some lingering symptoms. So the loss of taste and smell still can cause inflammation in the area. That will probably come back. It may take a little bit of time. But someone who didn't really have a lot of bad portions of the illness, we don't have the high concerns of like the brain fog or the heart problems. Often a lot of these younger kids, or I shouldn't say kids, but these young adults are doing okay and then doing okay post-COVID. But certainly looking out for any shortness of breath or any heart-related issues would probably be the number one that I'd be concerned about. But most 21-year-olds have a pretty strong heart, and really we're not seeing those long-term effects on some of these younger adults.
630 area code says, my gym is not using ceiling fans. Is that a good thing or not?
You know, I'm still struggling with gyms. You know, we look at ceiling fans, and really one of the biggest things we have anytime we're in an enclosed environment is air circulation. The more we can move the air, the more we can replace the air, whether it's, you know, turning air over, decreases the chance, obviously. We know that some ventilation in closed areas is not good, but in a gym area, you certainly would hope that they're doing large amounts of circulation, because I would imagine a lot of people aren't wearing masks while working out, and then that virus is getting into the air. So minimizing it, diluting it as much as possible certainly would be my recommendation.
847 says, thank you, Dr. Moose, for speaking out against the lies that have been told about spreading COVID-19. On the other hand, Kevin, here the 309 area code says, I personally don't know doctors who have told me that COVID is put on death certificates when not the major cause of death, so the hospital gets more money. Can you respond to that?
So anytime there's a diagnosis of COVID, we know that there is going to be an additional payment for the reasons that I talked about before. When we talk about death certificates, people don't understand what death certificates are for. Death certificates are for us to be able to trend diseases, illnesses, and many things. So we use death certificate data not for billing. We use death certificate data to say, wait a second, why do we have 20 bladder cancer patients that came from this area? What's going on in the environment in this area? Why is heart disease so prevalent in this area? So people have to realize that death certificates are more of a statistical thing for epidemiologists to try to look for trends and to see if there's an impact that we can make in the community to make it safer.
Dr. Kevin Most is the Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern's Central DuPage Hospital. Kevin, I hope you have a great day today. Thank you so much.
Dean, take care. We'll talk soon.
So we've got Sunday, we've got Monday, and then we've got an election. Well, voting is going on right now, has been going on right now, and everywhere. I got my vote, did my vote. Got my confirmation that the ballot that I dropped it off at one of the designated stations, has been received, and my vote has been counted. So I've done my part. And now I hope that you will do yours and encourage your friends and neighbors and relatives all to do the same. Yet, people still have tons of questions about early voting. Mail-in voting? I think it's probably too late for mail-in voting for your vote to count in some places, at least anyway. That's why we've invited back Matt Dietrich, who is with the Illinois State Board of Elections, to rejoin us. He was on with me the other day when I filled in for Anna DeVolantes and got some fantastic information. And Matt, welcome back. Nice to have you here with us. Hello.
Well, that's good to be here, Dean. Good morning.
So things are as a way of catching up since we spoke the other day. Things are still going well and still going gangbusters, I would imagine, right?
Right. We are up to over 3.4 million votes have already been cast in Illinois. We just ran an update at 10 a.m., in fact, and it shows that statewide we have about 673,000 vote-by-mail ballots that are still out there in the hands of voters that could come in before Election Day. We still have today and tomorrow. They'll be receiving and processing those. But that's the big number. The big number that people will be looking at on Tuesday night when those unofficial numbers come in will be the number of outstanding vote-by-mail ballots. Because remember, in Illinois, if you vote by mail, as long as your ballot is postmarked no later than November 3rd on Election Day, it can arrive through November 17th and still be counted.
Oh.
So as of today, we're looking at 673,000 mail votes that still potentially could come in. I would imagine that by Tuesday morning, we will have, I'm going to say, it's looking like maybe 400,000 or so, if we have another couple hundred thousand that get processed and voted today and tomorrow, that on election night we could still be looking at maybe 400,000
that have not come in yet.
That have not come in yet. That's out of close to 2.4 million vote by mail ballots that people applied for. Now we do know that roughly 40,000 people, this was as of Friday, so this number might be a little higher, but we know that about 40,000 people who applied for vote-by-mail ballots went ahead and voted in person. They either took their ballot with them and turned it in and voted in person,
yeah,
or they got impatient, didn't want to wait anymore, and just decided to go in. And if that happens, if you're out there and you've applied for a vote-by-mail ballot and you haven't received it yet, go into your early voting location today or tomorrow, or on election day, if you still haven't received that ballot, go to your precinct polling place. The election judge will have there'll be a note on your name in the poll book, and it'll show that you had requested a vote by mail ballot. They'll ask if you received it. You tell them no. You will sign an affidavit saying that I didn't receive my ballot and I'm requesting to vote in person. And then you'll get a regular ballot. You can vote in person.
And just go and do it the way we've always done it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So when will...
Mm-hmm. Now,
when will...
if you're one of those people, if you do that today or tomorrow and you vote, and then if by chance your ballot then shows up in your mailbox on election day, be sure to discard it. Do not send that ballot back in. That you will get in big trouble if you do that.
Not only will they know that you've already voted, but then it will appear as though that you're trying to commit fraud, and there are consequences for that.
And you had just signed a document to get that vote in person ballot. You signed a document saying, "I requested a mail ballot. I didn't get it. I'm hereby voting in person, and I will not. You know, and this is my vote."
Yeah. So when will like, for example, my vote? I dropped my I requested a mail-in ballot. I filled it out, sealed it up properly, made sure that I signed off on everything I was supposed to sign off on, and instead of mailing it, because it was a week away, and I was a little concerned would it get there in time, so I just took it to a designated drop-off point and dropped it off. I checked it was the day that we talked on Wednesday. I checked that evening, and it did say, when I went to the Chicago Board of Election Commissioners, it said that my ballot was received and it had been counted, so mine was confirmed. So when will those kind of early votes, either by mail or by going to a polling place early, when do those votes get counted? Before the votes on Election Day? After the votes on Election Day? When do those actually go into the mix?
Well, even though we can log ballots received, that's how we know how many people have already voted early and how many people have already voted by mail. We can log the number of ballots. But what cannot be done is no totals can be generated from the votes on those ballots. So once the polls close at 7 p.m. on Tuesday, that's when the local election authorities will run all of their totals for all their early voting, and they'll run all of their totals for all of the vote-by-mail ballots that have been processed and run through tabulators and were ready to go. So that's why fairly quickly on election night, usually you'll see the early voting returns get mixed in with the the in-person voting on Election Day.
So it'll all get counted after the polls close at 7 o'clock Chicago time.
Yep. It's not an instant process, but it's pretty quick.
It begins then. Yeah. All right. I wanted to spend as much time as possible answering our listeners' questions that they may have about all of this. One that's come up over and over again on our text line, and I was thinking about this because I had two deaths in my family over the past several months. For both my brother and my mother, voter registration cards came in for both of them. And I thought, oh, well, this is weird. You know, they've passed away. Both of them could have early voted. Would their votes have counted if they didn't vote early? But if they had voted early, if someone votes early and then passes away, what happens to their vote?
If you vote early and then you die after that, your vote will count. Once you vote early, that vote goes into the tabulator. There is no retrieving that ballot. There's no ballots are completely anonymous. So there is no way of retrieving a ballot once it's been processed. Likewise, if someone were to vote by mail, they drop their ballot in the secure drop box or they put it into a mailbox, and then they die that same day, a week later, 2 weeks later, more than likely their vote would count, because the way things work with vote by mail is that as soon as an election authority receives a vote by mail ballot, they have election judges who are working in the election authority office in teams of three who do intake on those ballots. They verify the signature immediately upon receipt. And then once they see that the ballot is intact and the signature matches the signature on record for the voter, again, that's fed into a tabulator, same process as in in-person early voting. And once it goes into that tabulator, there is no retrieving that vote. However, if a voter votes by mail and then dies later before that ballot is processed and the election authority is notified of the death, then that ballot, which would still be in its certification envelope with all of the voters' information on it, then that ballot would not be counted if there's confirmation that the voter is deceased. Now, in practical terms, it's not impossible, but it would take, first you'd have to have, that ballot would have to sit in the election authority office. They're required to acknowledge receipt within a day of getting them, but they're not required to process them immediately. So it would mean that a jurisdiction has to be waiting to process those vote-by-mail ballots for enough time that word gets back to the election authority that the voter is deceased, and therefore, under Illinois law, that voter is no longer a registered voter, so the vote-by-mail ballot can't be counted. That's the legal terms. Now, in practical terms, that's happened 40 times in this current election, 40 times mm-hmm. out of 2.4 million vote-by-mail applications, as of today, we've had 1.7 million votes cast by mail. So 40 out of 1.7 million you've had a case where the voter has died, the jurisdiction was notified in advance, and therefore the ballot wasn't processed and counted.
The ballot was taken out.
Did I
misunderstand what you said at the beginning of your response, though, that it would count?
An early vote in person, a person who goes early and votes in person, that vote is cast.
Oh, so
there is no removing that ballot from the tabulator.
But mail-in, it's different.
But when it's mailed in, now for all practical purposes, if someone mails the ballot in and then dies shortly thereafter, it almost certainly will have already been processed by the election authority. And unless there was a problem with the signature that required notification of the voter to cure the ballot, mm-hmm. that that mail ballot would count as a vote. And like I said, it has happened 40 times statewide out of the 1.7 million ballots that have been returned so far.
1025, Matt Dietrich, Illinois State Board of Elections, on the line with us, answering your questions about the election coming up Tuesday. And Susan, you're on WGN. Hello.
Hi, Dean. First of all, I want to tell you I'm a longtime listener.
Thank you.
And my condolences go out to you and your family.
Thank you. Thank you.
And my mom, she was 91. She was a longtime listener. She passed away last year.
Oh, God bless her. Thank you.
Yeah, thank
you. Very sweet of you.
Anyway, I've got a question. I got a mail-in ballot, and I mailed it October 22nd. I live in suburban Cook County in Niles. I didn't see a drop box. So I put it in the mail. I haven't received any confirmation that they received it or my count. Has my ballot was counted? Is it too soon, or did they not receive it?
Almost everybody, Matt, is texting in and asking about the confirmation.
I do know that Cook County had a couple of setbacks over the summer. They had a COVID outbreak that closed their office for a couple of weeks. They had to do an upgrade of their registration system that had been planned long before the pandemic, so that put them behind a little bit. But I believe they are all caught up with everything, and I think they had a press conference to that effect last week. What I would advise, I don't know if have you gone to the Cook County Clerk's website and used their online tracker for your ballot?
No, honestly, I don't have a computer.
Okay. Then I believe you should be able, you could try calling.
Okay.
Let me look. I'm going to see if there's a, I could probably come up with a phone number for you.
Hey, Matt, what is, while you're looking, let me just throw one more thing at you. What is that website that people can go and check? Because I tell you, the majority of the people on our text line are asking exactly the same question.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if you go to www.cookcountyclerk.com, and you can go to the elections section, they have a special notice on there that says, check here for questions about your mail ballot. So you can go there and get information. You can download a PDF file to answer any questions.
Okay, so there's info at cookcountyclerk.com. Then go to the elections section. Mm-hmm. And Susan, for you, do you have a phone number handy real quick, Matt? Or we can look it up and mention it.
Okay.
We may want to look it up later. I don't have it right here.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, Susan, we'll look it up and we'll mention it. I appreciate the call.
Okay, thank you so much, Dean.
Yeah, thank you. The 847 area code, Matt, is asking, is it too late to mail in a ballot? I would find it very difficult to believe that something was mailed today, that it would get where it needs to get and be processed in time for the election on Tuesday. Am I correct?
Yeah, we had discussions with the Postal Service early in the summer when all this was going on. And one of our questions that we had was, and actually we were on a call with Senators Durbin and Duckworth, and one of the senators' questions was, can the Postal Service guarantee if someone in Illinois gets their ballot postmarked on November 3rd, can the Postal Service guarantee that that ballot will reach the election authority by November 17th? The Postal Service's general counsel wouldn't say the word guarantee, but they walked right up to the edge on it. So, and what we know about mail delivery and what you know about mail delivery in your area, I would say it almost certainly would get there within 2 weeks if it's postmarked by November 3rd. And I really think that even though, as we said earlier, we're looking at potentially maybe 400,000 vote-by-mail ballots or more that could be coming in after Election Day through November 17th, but really the bulk of those will be in within 3 to 5 days of the election. Most of those ballots are sent within Illinois to election authorities within Illinois. I know that there have been problems with mail delivery and delays. We heard from people in the city about this. But I would have to think that if you are mailing your ballot today from the suburbs to Cook County Clerk's office, that it's going to get there in that required 16-day time period. Yeah,
it just seems like if you really
need to worry about that.
Yeah, if you really want to make sure, though, it's just so easy to fill out the ballot and drop it off. There are drop-off points in every neighborhood now, in every village, in every suburb. And I don't know if you can speak to Indiana or Wisconsin, but I know that Wisconsin, for example, will not accept ballots received after Election Day. So, it's
different from state to state.
Different from state to state, exactly.
Democracy calling, rock the vote. Democracy calling, rock the vote. Liberty calling.
It's a couple of days left. Tuesday is Election Day.
Lady Liberty.
Some of you will rock it old school and actually go to a polling place on Tuesday and vote. Despite coronavirus concerns, despite the anticipation of long lines, many of us have already cast our votes either by mail or early voting. Matt Dietrich is with the Illinois State Board of Elections to answer questions as best we can. Matt, during the news, we did some checking on that Cook County website that you were talking about, if people want to get information. And the website is cookcountyclerk.com/service/your-voter-information. Good luck remembering all that. Cook County Clerk.
Yeah, I'm looking at that too, Dean. I have it up on my screen now as well.
CookCountyClerk.com/service/your-voter-information. The phone number is 312-603-7790. 312-603-7790. Yet, everyone on our text line is saying that they've been trying to call for days and are not getting any response. So I don't know what to tell you with something like that, but it's going to be very, very difficult. Are the local jurisdictions, Matt, required to give you a confirmation that your vote has been received?
They're required under the election bill that was passed this year. They're required to give voters some way to check the status of their ballot. Now, in some of the smaller counties, especially downstate, they don't have very robust websites, so you don't have these online trackers, and you can only do it by phone in those cases. So, but they all are required to give you some means of checking the status of your ballot.
Yeah, I live
now,
in.
I did hear too. I know that last week Cook County had said that if you cannot verify the status of your ballot and you're worried about it, that you can go in and vote provisionally.
What does that mean?
That's only for
what does that mean? Vote provisionally.
Well, I think what it means is that if you go in person to your polling place, if you've tried and either the online tracker says the status can't be determined, or if you can't get through on the phone, or you have no way of tracking it, that you could go into a polling place and explain the situation. Now, if the election judge can see that your vote has already been logged, that would confirm it. And
right.
But if it can't be confirmed at that point, you'd cast a provisional ballot, which means you'd fill out your ballot, but the ballot would not be counted until after all of the vote by mail ballots have been processed and yours is confirmed to have not been among them.
Got it. Okay. All right. Now
that gets a little complicated, and I think that I would urge voters in suburban Cook to keep trying. And to try the online tool if you possibly can. Yeah. If you the caller earlier who didn't have a computer, didn't have access to it, sometimes you can get someone to help you do these things.
Right, exactly.
You know, maybe there's
somebody you know must have a computer to do all of that. And and I would say at this point, if you still haven't mailed in your vote, that you should just go. Until what time can people early vote? Can you do that all the way up until Tuesday?
Yeah, early voting goes tomorrow. And in a lot of jurisdictions are having evening hours tomorrow, too.
Is it today also? Is early voting going on today also?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep, in a lot of jurisdictions. The local election authorities were given a lot of freedom this year to establish longer hours, additional days for early voting. Usually it's set in statute when they have to have them, that they would have to be. The larger counties always have early voting on the weekend before Election Day.
Okay.
And on the weekend previous to that, they'll have some evening hours. But this year, they were allowed, if they wanted to have evening hours as long as they wanted them and to be open any weekend days throughout the early voting period.
Here's Rita on WGN. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I have a question regarding what documentation you need to vote in person. My daughter's not sure, or she can't find her voter's registration card. So what does she need to bring when she goes to vote?
Well, if she knows that she is a registered voter, she doesn't need to bring anything. In Illinois, the election authorities are prohibited from requiring ID, except in certain cases. So if your daughter knows that she's registered, if she's confirmed her registration status, she doesn't need any ID. If she's not registered and she's going to register either at an early voting location or on Election Day, then she would need to bring two pieces of ID, one of which shows her residence where she'd be registering to vote, and the other to confirm that she is who she says she is. Most commonly, people would use their driver's license as one, and maybe a bank statement or a utility bill that's mailed to the address, or a lease, those types of things. But if your daughter knows that she's registered and just can't find the voting card, that's not a problem. Your signature is your identification in Illinois.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think I've ever had to show ID when I went to vote. And
no.
I've always liked going to the polling place on Election Day. It's just kind of tradition. My dad used to take me into the polling place with him and, you know, behind the curtain, and you pull the lever and all that. And I just think, you know, there's something ceremonial about it to me. But this year, with all the disease and everything going on, I decided to do it the early way. We have the 708 area code, Matt, asking, is it possible for someone to register to vote today or tomorrow or on voting day? Is it too late?
It absolutely is. Yeah, just like I just said, you can go to your early voting location, do it there. All of Cook, Chicago, the collar counties, you'll be able to do it at your precinct polling place. Some of the smaller counties will have Election Day registration only at the office of the election authority. But certainly everyone in the WGN, in the greater Chicagoland area, could go to their precinct on Election Day. Be sure you take two pieces of ID.
Okay.
They don't have to be picture ID, although most people do tend to use their driver's license. What the registration requires is proof of your residence and proof of your identity.
Got it.
Most of the time, your two pieces of ID will cover both of those things, but not necessarily.
Here is the website. Once again, a lot of people are asking one more time for the website for Cook County to check. It's www.cookcountyclerk.com/service/your-voter-information. We'll post all of that because I'm sure people still didn't get it. But if you go to the Cook County Clerk site, you can
also
do a
Google search.
Do a Google search.
Yeah, and you can also do a Google search for Cook County ballot tracker.
There you go. Okay, very good.
Cook County ballot tracker, or whatever county you're in, and it'll take you to. I noticed that in some of the collar counties, they're using there's a service called Ballot Tracks, I think, and if you do like a Lake County ballot tracker, it'll take you right to it for your Google search.
Matt, good luck on Tuesday. I hope things go flawlessly like they always do here in the state of Illinois. I mean that somewhat sarcastically, but I really do hope they go flawlessly. Thank you for all the great information that you've provided to us ahead of time. We really appreciate it.
Good to be here, Dean. Everybody should get out and vote.
Absolutely. Matt Dietrich, Illinois State Board of Elections. It is 10:50 on WGN. This is Dean Richards. Sunday morning, yesterday morning when I woke up, it was two bulletins on my phone that the legendary actor Sean Connery had passed away. We know him from so many different movies, the Indiana Jones movies and variety of films, including Hunt for Red October, and of course the movie for which he won an Oscar, The Untouchables, that he shot here in Chicago. But we will always remember Sean Connery, my mind anyway, as the James Bond, quintessentially, for Dr. No and Goldfinger and From Russia with Love, Thunderball, You Only Live Twice, Diamonds Are Forever, Never Say Never. His final film that he made was in 2003, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. It was kind of a mythical film. Honestly, the film was not the greatest in the world, but I was thrilled that I had the opportunity to go to Las Vegas and interview the cast of the movie, which included a one-on-one sit-down with the great Sean Connery. And we found that interview in our archives this morning, one-on-one with Sean Connery.
A conversation with Sean Connery that we had in Las Vegas last week, talking about his new film, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, a bunch of 19th century fictional characters from literature, Captain Nemo, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, Tom Sawyer, Dorian Gray, and this crusty old adventurer named Alan Quatermain, played by the great Sean Connery. It sounds like a really interesting concept, these interesting people fighting the evil phantom who wants to take over the world. But this film is just so sloppy and put together so poorly. There's just one cliche after another, even with Sean Connery. That wasn't enough to save it. Good old 007 himself couldn't save the day on this one. While we were in Las Vegas last week talking to him, it happened to be the day that Katharine Hepburn died. So we talked with him about that legend and his own legendary status and about doing this adventure film. Did this remind you of, you know, like doing Indiana Jones? Like,
well, it's a bit of that, isn't it? Also because that is a kind of period too, although this is ahead of that, of Indiana Jones. I mean, the one Indiana Jones I did was at the time of the Nazis, and so it was 36 on, I said, 36. This is the end of the 19th.
Do you like these kind of adventure kind of roles?
Yeah. And I like the characters that are in this piece, and they're all kind of diverse, quite different, and I think extremely well acted. And also the literary figures, but very defined characters.
Yeah, we were all saying, you know, he's getting around really well. I mean, he's keeping up with all these young kids, you know, pretty well. Was that all you?
Yeah. Well, most, no, not all of it. No, because I can't do some of, you know, the dives off the cars and all that kind of stuff. We need to work together with the coordinator, with the fights and, you know, that stuff.
Yeah. Did you know Katharine Hepburn?
I never met her. The only person who knew her well enough that I know well is Sidney Lumet, who did Long Day's Journey with her and Ralph Richardson. And he was absolutely was mad about her. I was saying the other day, she had, I read once, and that she'd had a script developed to direct. She was going to do. I'm sure it must have been an interesting script. I actually think pretty good.
Real Spitfire, I'll bet.
Well,
you know, whatever,
yeah,
it was, yeah.
Pretty intelligent.
Yeah. Because, you know, when we think of film legends, we think of people like Katharine Hepburn. But, you know, do you think of yourself in that sort of same category of a real film legend?
No, not really.
Really?
No.
Why not?
Well, I was asked that today and about how one was with the actors when we came to rehearse and everything. There was sort of awed of that because of your the impression that one makes, but I don't I'm lying to say that I'm not aware of the body of work that one's done, and you know, you don't get asked to do this kind of stuff unless you can deliver, but no, it's not something that one's that I'm not, and also that overly concerned with.
Sure. I mean, you must just be thinking about what the next project is and whatever excites you next. But because the American Film Institute recently, you know, they had that list of the top good guys of all time, and James Bond, your James Bond,
right,
came out number 3 on the list. So.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Oh, really?
Oh, well, thank you.
It's. That's what I say with the legend. After all these years, after all the James Bonds that have came since you, that yours is still so remembered, and your body of work is still, you know, remembered in such a fond way.
Well, I think that she said it, Hepburn, that she'd been around so long, which is more of a surviving element than anything. I think she was, which I must say I was very impressed with her comments about most things. She was pretty substantial, I think.
Yeah, I was watching it on the news this morning and just watching some of her interviews, and she was really quite remarkable.
I didn't see. I've been here since this morning.
Right, not a chance. Are these kinds of films more challenging to you than dramatic roles?
Well, it's a different sort of... I'm at the moment preparing for another film in the Czech Republic with Miloš Forman, and that's much more worthy, but more about old soldier than this. But they all have their own demand. That with these, stillness is not that important, except for the occasion. But in the other ones, to be able to be still is a big plus.
My 2003 interview, my one and only time with Sir Sean Connery, didn't sound as dorky as I felt. As I'd mentioned, my knees were knocking when I was doing that interview. I've never been so nervous as when I interviewed the real James Bond. It was a privilege and an honor, and our condolences to his family on his passing.
Like, not even our least weird politician. He's our least weird politician in America. He's on, like, 45 of the weird ones. I'm supposed to make an announcement. On November 3rd, there is an elderly man contest. So there's two elderly men, and you're supposed to choose your favorite of the two elderly men. You can put it in the mail, or you can go and write down which elderly man you like, and then we'll add them all up, and then we might have the same elderly man, or we might have a new elderly man. But just rest assured, no matter what happens, nothing much will change in the United States. The rich will continue to prosper while the poor languish. Families will be upended by mental illness and drug addiction. Jane Lynch will continue to book lots of projects, and when she does, she'll deliver. She's so good at being on TV. She's very good.
John Mulaney on Saturday Night Live last night. Very, very funny. This guy delivers every time that he's been on SNL. It's his fourth time hosting right now. And every time that he's been on, he's been really great. So nice job from him. Did you hear who's hosting SNL next week? The Saturday Night Live after the election. Dave Chappelle has been tapped, just like in 2016. The SNL, remember the SNL after the election last time? And Dave Chappelle was the host and gave a chilling monologue and Kate McKinnon came on and sang Hallelujah. I mean, it's one of the most memorable SNLs in SNL history. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with the election, I imagine, number one. But really interesting to see what Dave Chappelle will have to say about it all. You know what people are really looking forward to? Never mind the election. I've heard people say they are most interested in our big Tree Time special that is coming up next Sunday here on WGN. Normally, we go out to Tree Time in Lake Barrington. But obviously, because of COVID-19, we're not doing a live show in front of an audience this year. Wouldn't be safe for anybody. So we're going to assemble the crew here. We're going to bring as much of the excitement as we possibly can of our annual Tree Time broadcast to the Skyline Studio here on Wacker Drive. Elton Jim Toronto, you guys, will be here with us next Sunday.
You mentioned that on Wednesday.
Yeah, so don't say that you haven't been warned. Still plenty of time for all of us to call in sick.
Can I do a remote broadcast from the parking lot out at Tree Time?
What do you mean?
I'll just be on my cell phone.
You just want to be out in Lake Barrington by yourself?
To give us a little perspective.
Kind of a scene setter.
Yeah, right. A scener, as we call it.
Here's Schwani out in the parking lot. Yep, there goes an Impala. Yeah, that looks like a pickup truck pulling into the lot. Yeah, that's nice. Schwani, you can go anywhere you'd like to go. In fact, I've got
had some suggestions.
Now that I think of it. So we're going to play back some highlights of shows that we've done in the past. And we're going to create some new memories.
Of Schwani in the parking lot.
I think we're going to have some fun with this.
Now I'm wondering if Schwani could drive me to the station.
That's tradition.
That's becoming tradition because I did, in fact, drive you to the
to Lake
event
Barrington
last year. Yeah.
Bought me a coffee.
Yeah.
Maybe you could pick all of us up, Schwani.
That'd be nice.
School bus.
You know what I'm going to bring in just for fun? The poster of me where you were shooting the arrow off my head.
I wasn't shooting an arrow off your head.
Or shooting the apple off my head.
Apple off of your head.
Thank you.
With the bow and arrow.
Yeah, I'm bringing in the poster just for fun. And I'm going to place it right here at the anchor desk.
Good. Maybe I'll bring in a bow and arrow.
Yeah, and then you won't be shooting at the poster this year, right?
You know, that's the thing that we like to do on this Tree Time show. We try to make things as visual as possible.
For the radio.
So they don't make one bit of sense on the radio. That if there is one tradition that we've done on this Tree Time show, it's doing things that don't make sense to the listeners, only to
that's
us.
That's why they like it.
Out of Tree Time. So anyway, that's going to be all morning. We've got a full show next week, so we're going to have lots of fun with that. I'm looking forward to hearing some of the old clips from shows that we've done in the past, which, you know, I was going back and forth on whether or not I should play, you know, because my mom came to lots of those shows that we did out of Tree Time, and your dad. Schwani. That's where Schwani's dad was hitting on my mom. He's quite the player, that Paul Schwan. He's quite irresistible.
He never met a stranger.
He is an extremely cordial, friendly man. I don't know what happened to you, but he is one of the nicest guys there is. Anyway, so I was, you know, I didn't know if it was going to be weird to hear my mom's voice. She just passed away a month ago, but I think I'm going to put on my big boy pants because she really enjoyed those Tree Time shows, and we had some fun times out there with her. So we'll remember my mom's memory by playing some of these tapes and of her visit on the show and your dad and fun moments and some of the Christmas sing-alongs, the famous
12
days of Christmas that we butcher every year. We'll share all of that as well. So that's next week.
See how far we go off pitch from the start to the end.
Let's see. That's the beautiful part this year. We don't actually have to do any singing. We can just listen to the recorded
even better
magic of it all. I can't account for what Elton Jim might do, but...
Yeah.
We'll have some fun with that. That's all next week. Dean Richards, Sunday morning.
Yeah.
A little mini version of our Food Time show, the bite-sized version, if you will. Today, I wanted to talk about a brand new service of food delivery to your home that has just started up. It sounds kind of interesting. And there's all kinds of services, but very few that are offering you fresh produce, fresh meat, the kinds of things that sometimes you can't get from many of the online services that are so popular right now. This one is called Midwest Fresh. And Patrick Fitzgerald started it all with his brother and joins us on the phone line right now to talk about it. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, good morning, Dean, and thank you for having me on.
Oh, thank you for joining us. So explain what the difference is between Fresh Midwest and some of the other services that are out there.
So at Fresh Midwest, our passion is really all about the fresh groceries. You'll find local produce, fresh salads, meal kits, restaurant quality, meats and seafood, fresh snacks, and a new category that we call restaurant made.
What does restaurant made mean? Or orders from local restaurants?
Well, it's a little bit different. So this category is all about our local partners like Let Us Entertain You, Wildfire, and Big Bowl. We have a lot of others that are coming on. With my prior business with Midwest Foods, we brought in a lot. We sold a lot of restaurants and high quality chefs. So what we did is we formed a partnership with these restaurants, and they're making it right in the restaurant, and they're having it shipped to me, and I'm selling their product out. So with a lot of delivery services and stuff, there's a more of a maybe professional approach that we bring towards it. And with restaurant made, it's actually making the product right in the restaurant. And with the plight that's going on with the restaurants today that everyone's hearing in the news, we feel that this is not only helps the restaurants by helping them stay open, but also helps them with sustaining their employees. And it's some of the incredible food.
Yeah, well, you know, that's why I thought this is such a great idea and why I wanted to talk about this, because of what's happening with restaurants, number one. But number two, more and more I'm hearing that people are just not comfortable even going to the grocery stores anymore because of, the lackadaisical habits that a lot of people have about wearing masks and keeping their safe distances, that it's just so much easier to go to, you know, someplace online where you can place your orders and have a pretty high confidence level that what you're picking is going to be of high quality. It's the other thing that really impressed me when I was looking around FreshMidwest.com, which is the website. There is clearly an attention to detail of, if you order some fruits or vegetables, that you're not going to get something that's, you're going to have to toss when it gets to the house, that it's going to be of high quality when it comes to be delivered to your home.
Yeah, and you bring up a very important point is that, you know, there's other delivery services that are out there, and the level of protection that they have, whether it's putting it in their car, bringing it to your door, just wasn't for us. And being in the produce business my whole life, we bring a higher level of food safety that isn't out there in the marketplace right now. So with our warehouse, we have over 15 food safety and quality control people that just check the product, and over 200 employees that fill the orders and manufacture the product. It's an incredible system that we have, and at every level we've been using masks even before the COVID period started, and now it's even that much more important. We have gloves on. Our cold chain really protects the product itself. And what happens, I mean, when it comes in from the growers, whether it's local, whether it's in California, there's no middleman. It's not sitting on some distribution shelves. It's literally being opened and packaged in a box delivered directly to you at your door.
Yeah, and aren't a lot of the products also packaged in, you know, individual packages as well? So it's not like a lot of people are ruffling through the product and getting their, you know, their fingers all over the product before you get it home. It's all wrapped up pretty safely before it ever leaves your warehouse, right?
Yeah, you're exactly right. And with the spikes that we've been having, it's even more crucial to us that the level of food safety that we have at the warehouse is not only maintained, but taken to a higher level with packaging in those plastics and different paper bags and stuff for some of the sandwiches that we do. We do emphasize that.
Yeah. So all the same produce that we would find in a store, right?
Mm-hmm. Even more. There's things that you're not going to find on the store. I have this wonderful egg farmer. Her name is Mary Ann Berry. She runs this farm that's called Egg Exceptional Abilities, and they're colored different eggs with different varieties of chickens. I have plenty of specialty produce from the Chicago Botanical Gardens that does a special pack with us from their farm on Ogden. The product's a aquaponic lettuce that they package there and they ship to us.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I mean, I spent quite a bit of time just nosing around your website, seeing what's on there. And I said to myself, oh, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
You know, and the idea that you don't have to, you know, go to parking lots and stand in line with people coughing on you and, you know, all the difficulties that you find now when you go to the grocery stores. And especially now at Thanksgiving time, I know that Thanksgiving probably is going to be pretty different for everybody this year. But at a time when we're going to, traditionally, we spent a lot of time in grocery stores preparing for the holidays, here's a way you can do it right in front of your computer and, get it done immediately.
Yeah. When we started Fresh Midwest, we had hired two former employees, which we have more now, but Tony Stallone and Mary Rose Nissen, who came up with the line of the best of Fresh. And we feel that with what we're selecting out of that, we've really got the best offerings out there. And right now we have over 520, 25 items on there with a ton more coming on. That what we're picking for that person is if we were going to pick it for our mothers.
Yeah, it's very obvious the attention to detail from looking at the site. People want to get more information, take a look at what you've got, take a look at the pricing, et cetera. What's the best way to do all that?
Go to freshmidwest.com. It's actually exciting and fun just to go through the products and take a look at it. But we have some great fresh snacks that are on there, whether it's hummus and fresh cut sliced peppers. The products, I think, are really amazing, and you'll get an exceptional experience there.
Yeah, take a look. Freshmidwest.com is the website. Patrick Fitzgerald, it's you and your twin brother, right, that started this?
Yeah.
I like that. I admire
it. So we're actually a second-generation family.
Okay, all right.
In the produce business. So these relationships go back decades. We've been in business now over 50 years. My father actually started the company, and he's long past, but the eight sons, sisters and brothers are working in the company now, and you know, it's exciting. It's very exciting for us right now.
Good for you. Well, congratulations on this new enterprise. Freshmidwest.com is where you can find it. Patrick Fitzgerald, I hope you have a great Sunday today. Thank you for joining us.
Great. Thank you, Dean. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. All right. So that's going to wind it up for us today. First and foremost, I have to remind everybody, if you have not voted yet, please get to your polling place, early vote. Get out there and, you know, do it old school style on Tuesday. Get to your polling place on election day itself and vote. If you've mailed in and you haven't gotten any confirmation, you've got a couple of days, today included, where you can do a little checking to, you know, find out if your ballots have been received and have been counted. It's never been so important to exercise your right as an American. We've said this every single year, that there's an election, especially presidential elections, to get out there and exercise your voice. Let your voice be heard. Okay, so we'll see you next week for our big Tree Time show that we're going to be doing here on WGN. Next Sunday morning, our big Tree Time Christmas Spectacular in November. We're looking forward to having lots of fun with that. As always, we will see you on Bob Surratt's show Monday through Friday between 8 and 8:30. We always have fun talking about entertainment and having a few laughs with Bob every morning. Of course, on the WGN TV morning news as well. Tomorrow morning, I will be showing you some of my 2003 interview, my one and only interview with Sir Sean Connery, just as a way of continuing to pay tribute to this incredible actor. So we've got some good stuff coming up for you this week. Oh, and I have to mention another big thing this week. There's a new Portillo's opening on Addison and Kimball, only blocks away from WGN. So if you want to see what I look like, what I weigh now versus what I'll weigh in about a month from now when I've had their chocolate cake every single day, now that they're so close to where I work, they're opening tomorrow, I understand. So if anyone's looking for me tomorrow, I'll be there. I'll be at the Portillo's all day tomorrow. And maybe for the rest of my life. We've got Packers and Vikings football, I'm told, coming up next here on 720 WGN Chicago.